Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you tonight?
Good. The Oilers are still in the playoff, whatever you want to call it. They're back. They're hanging in there. They're 6 points back, Bruce, with, what is it? They played 66 games, so 16
left.
That's time. There's time there. It would be a minor miracle, but they're playing well.
Just need a Bakersfield-class winning streak.
Well, not quite, but they probably do have to win, I don't know, 12 of 16.
That would get them in, certainly get them in the conversation.
Yeah, maybe 13.
It's not impossible. I'm not sure we got the team to.
Oh, we do not.
To really do that.
We do not. In fact, I spent most of the night, first period at least, sharpening my knife, ready to stick it in.
That was
really bad.
And then the second period was going nowhere for most of the period. And I was thinking, how could this even be the same team that we saw on Saturday afternoon? Absolutely shut down and stomped the Columbus Blue Jackets. But then they turned it up a few notches. So
this is our two good things, two bad things, two numbers podcast. Bruce, what is your good thing?
Well, that actually is my good thing, is how the Oilers did manage to turn it up and really turn the game around in about 5 short minutes at the end of the second period. When they had a couple of good shifts before they scored, down 3-1. They'd really been going nowhere most of the period. And they were down 3-1. And then all of a sudden the puck started to go into the Buffalo end and stay in the Buffalo end. And then with about 3.5 minutes left, they finally broke through on a Zach Cassian one-timer. This is true.
That was a beautiful shot.
Off a great pass, cross-seam pass by Connor McDavid and Cassian, who had caused the Oilers possibly a goal earlier by missing the net and creating a jailbreak, did not miss the net on this occasion. He bulged the twine, and all of a sudden there was life in the team. And then they came down and they had another fantastic shift. Not quite as good as the all-world shift that they had on Saturday, which, frankly, is as good as hockey can get, in my opinion. But very, very good. And this time it was because it wasn't McDavid and Drysdale night. They got split up. This was the Drysdale line with Gagne and Chase on that were just holding the puck in and creating one chance after another. And finally, Leon found Darnell Nurse with a beautiful sort of no look behind the back right through the slot. And Nurse boomed that one home with a one-timer. Another great shot. And then as a bonus, I got a real kind of cheesy one just in the dying seconds. But cheesy, but hard work created the goal. Curry and Lucic won battles along the boards. Larson got the puck at the point. He moved in, took a shot just as Brodziak was driving towards the net front, and it caught him in the skate and trickled through a not-so-spectacular Linus Ullmark in the Buffalo cage. And just like that, it was 4-3 Edmonton. Just out of nowhere, the Oilers were ahead. And they managed to hang on the rest of the way. I won't say the third period was necessarily my good thing, but they did manage to keep that lead and win the game. And that's a good thing.
There was lots of good things in that game. I really liked Andre Sekera's play again. He played 15 minutes. I like how they're using him. They're not overusing him. Man, he's playing kind of such smart puck-moving hockey. It's a pleasure to behold, and it's exactly what the Edmonton Oilers need. There was also Pominville's missed shot, which was a really good thing. Like, to get a break like that, and also Skinner's deflection off the post.
Well, that's
right at the end of the game.
More normal. What's Pominville?
Yeah, that was more normal.
Off the charts. Like,
so Pominville, he just, what a nightmare play. But my good thing is Koskinen. He didn't. I didn't have him at fault on any of the early goals. Mm-hmm. But you have to make stops on grade A shots if you're an NHL goalie. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, from 2:37 of the first period when they scored their third goal on a Nurse falling down and
Jack Eichel snipe.
Yeah.
It was a great shot.
Koskinen shut the door completely. And he got a little help from, he got some good luck, but he also made some nice saves. And My Vegas, like Vegas is still have the Oilers on as potential to win the Stanley Cup. I listed the five things that has to happen. And of course, number one on that list is Koskinen has to play like Grant Fuhr in 1987. So I don't know if he was that tonight, but he got the job done. Good for Mikko Koskinen.
Well, he and that in the last 8 minutes, he got help from that post. He got divine help on that double hit from Pominville, who scored a lot of goals in his career and somehow managed to not score that one. And then also
Great block by
great
Russell.
block by Chris Russell. That all happened in the last 8 minutes of play, where Koskinen got some help from outside cost sources, but he made some good stops himself.
So, what is your bad thing?
I really don't like to do this, but I'm going to do it. Connor McDavid, empty net. I mean, he made a great play. He broke out of the Oilers zone. He went through an obvious, blatant, penalizable, if it were any player but McDavid, pick from Rasmus Dahlin, overpowered him, recovered the puck inside the Buffalo blue line, and he had a clear path to the empty net. All he had to do was skate the puck right into the blue paint and put it in, like we've seen him do on a number of empty net goals in the past. He wins a foot race and he just walks it into the net. And for some reason, he, with that clear path, instead of just charging towards the net and winning the race like he wins every race, he pulled up from about 40 feet and then he missed. I mean, the two things together, but to me, it was the mental error that was the bigger thing, you know, the physical error. Like he gave himself a chance to miss when really the only play was to take it to the net. And I was just shocked that at such a crucial time in the game that he would make a mental error of that magnitude. And it wound up with
Huge.
a Buffalo 6-on-4 power play for the last 45 seconds of the game. I mean, this game was not won. And it would have been with that empty net goal. And it just was a mistake. And because it's such a rare thing from this player, especially offensively, like, you know, he generally knows what to do with the puck in the good end of the ice, but his nose for the net this last while has gone a little bit walkabout, and that was a clear case of just driving in there, man. Just skate it hard, and there's nobody going to stop you. I just
Indeed. If it
don't
was any other
understand it.
player, Bruce, we would be on his case for doing
Well,
that play.
I'm on his case because it's any player. Any player who makes a mistake like that is going to hear about it. Even the great Connor McDavid. I mean, if Leon Draisaitl made that mistake, I mean, can you
Oh,
imagine the
geez.
hooing and crying that would be coming from the from every direction? But anyway, that thankfully they killed off the game. McDavid himself, in fact, was responsible for some of the late game, you know, the penalty killing at the very end where he drove the puck out of the Oilers zone again in the last few seconds. But
Yeah.
it was just, my heart rate did not need that. It needed to be going down at that point, not way up for the last
Yeah.
little bit of the game. I was
So,
pretty tense by then.
my bad thing was I didn't like Adam Larson in the, especially in the first period. His game settled down after that. But come on, like he's supposed to be, and he it often is a really solid defensive defenseman, but falls down on the Eichel goal. He's one of the, he lets the pass out on the Mittelstädt goal. He makes another mistake on another grade A chance, he and Klefbom. It's not good enough, Bruce. That's not good enough from Adam Larsson. He's got to be more aware on the ice. He's got to play smarter hockey, and he's got to get it in gear. And there you go.
Well, he dropped his stick on that first goal. So that was the first mistake. Then he tried to pick it up, which was his second mistake. Then he failed to pick it up and he had to pursue it higher into the zone, which he kept going after, which was his third mistake. And Eichel just walked into the bingo card free space that was created there and put the puck in the net while Larson was concerned about picking up his damn stick. That
And I know
didn't work out.
Larson plays tough competition game in and game out, and he's a very valuable player on the team. But you know, pick it up, man. Like you're the top pairing guy with Klefbom, and the Oilers need more out of you. You gotta get more, think the game a little bit, defensive game a little bit better out there. So I
I'd
didn't like
argue
that.
I'd argue he did pick it up. In the second period, he contributed to five Oilers scoring chances.
He did pick it up, yeah.
And was involved in two Edmonton goals. So he at least, I mean, you wouldn't expect Larson to be high event at both ends, but that's what he was tonight.
Indeed. Okay, what is your number? Or did you give your bad thing? What's your number?
My bad thing was that empty net play.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Number.
I'm going to go with a few numbers with the common thread that this was a very, very odd game for the Oilers. You know, I run the event summary after every game, and I look at all the Oilers charts, and I pick out the team leaders on forward and defense. And in this game, the Oilers team leaders were not guys that you would expect. Connor McDavid, for example, led the Oilers in, wait for it, shorthanded time on ice. He was the most commonly used penalty killer for the Oilers, forward or defense. Adam Larson led the team in shots on goal. Adam Larson. Okay. The leading hitters on the team, well, Milan Lucic was one. That's pretty normal. But he was tied with Josh Curry and Toby Reeder, two guys that are never in past experience anywhere near there. You had Chris Russell leading the defense corps in ice time when he's generally number four and several minutes behind Nurse and Klefbom. Not tonight. And speaking of Klefbom, he led the defense in hits. You tell me the last time that ever happened. Probably never. And finally, the winning goal, Kyle Brodziak.
Yes.
Everybody, just like everybody predicted.
Indeed.
It was just a weird, weird game. And that sort of set that basket of weird team leaders kind of really jumped off the page of me. These are names you just don't normally see, and there was a bunch of them.
All right, my number is six. It's the number of grade A scoring chances that Leon Draisaitl made a major contribution to. He had a goal and an assist. They were both fantastic offensive plays. Bruce, he's outplayed Connor McDavid for the last month, and that's pretty darn good. So, you know, one of the five things, if the Oilers are going to get to the playoffs, is I do think they have to break these players up on lines. The Oilers are just...
They did tonight, eh?
They did tonight, and it made a difference. I like them, of course, penalty killing on the power play together, but the Oilers are so woeful. They can't get anything on the attack going without one of those two guys on the ice. And, you know, all due respect to Nuge, he's got some points this year. He's not the driver of a line, and I don't think he ever has been, honestly. He's a good player, but that's not him. But it is Draisaitl, and it is McDavid, and great to see him, Leon Draisaitl, coming into his own as an NHL, bona fide NHL superstar right now.
Yeah, well, he's a bull on the puck these days, or a bulldog, or a bull moose, or some kind of bull on the puck, rushing it, controlling it along the boards, fending off opposing players until he can dish it. And that one timer of his, he's got such confidence. The puck comes on his stick and he just snaps it right away. And oftentimes it winds up in the back of the net as it did on tonight's shorty.
It's totally getting Yari Curry like. That shot is getting Yari Curry like, eh?
Or
Esposito like, maybe
somebody
better.
The other day compared him to Phil Esposito. Was that you?
Yeah.
Anyway, somebody.
Well, I think a number of people have, Bruce.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm starting to see it. I said it to my wife tonight for the first time. I said, and she's a huge, huge Boston fan in the Bobby Orr days. And I said, you know, I'm starting to see that some people are talking about, and I mean, obviously, Phil is one of the greatest players of all time. So that's a very high bar. But in terms of style of play, Phil was, a big hulking guy, way faster than he looked. When he got his legs moving, he could really clip along because he was a big man, and he took his space in the slot, and when the puck came on his stick, he just fired away. And he's
now fifth in lead scoring, Bruce, tied with Sidney Crosby at 83 points. He's 9 points back of McDavid.
Mm-hmm.
McDavid's played fewer games, of course.
And about 20 behind Kucherov or more?
Kucherov has gotten quite the lead. That has
stratosphere, eh?
Yeah, quite the season for that.
Still top five.
Top five. That's fantastic. I mean,
which other teams have two in the top five? I'm thinking zero. So makes me wonder.
Zero. Tampa. Oh, two in the top five. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have two in the top 10. Tampa has Braden Point at number 10 and Kucherov at number one.
Right.
In terms of duos,
They have the most.
Tavares 72 points, and Mitch Marner 81. But in terms of duos in the NHL, yeah, the Oilers
only Kucherov and Point that are ahead of.
Part of me is just still wishes they would bring up more of these talented players. Like, I just think they need more talent, Bruce, to really make a run at it, because the goals are so hard to get, and there's a fair amount of luck. You know, if we're completely honest, there's a fair amount of luck that the Oilers need to win games, even with these two superlative players. And I don't know the justification for keep sending out Kyle Brodziak, although he scored a goal tonight, but he was also horrible on a goal against.
Game winner.
I don't know the justification for sending out Tobias Reeder. I'd even bench Lucic part of the time, some of the time. I just think they need to be faster and more dangerous on the attack. And I don't see them putting it together a winning streak. Now, maybe they think they can do it. I don't know. But I just think they're shooting themselves in the foot by not deploying some of these players.
I agree with most of what you're saying, but I do think that's next year country. I think the team is the team for now, and they got to make do with what they got. And I don't want to mess with that Bakersfield situation. I don't necessarily want to rush any kids, but next year I want to see kids on the team.
They could only bring two, right?
They're very limited in what they've already used two of their four recalls.
I don't know. Like, I'm not saying bring two, but I would like to see Cooper Marody, for instance, up on the third line or on the top line, with McDavid or with Dreisaitl instead of Toby Reeder. I just want to see one move in that. Like, Curry's worked out fantastic, right? I think we can all agree on that. Why not try it again? Now, I know, like, they brought up other players. They brought up Gambardella. I actually didn't mind him, but he didn't make a huge impression. But bring up Gambardella or bring up Cooper Marody or bring up both those guys for a while. You can send them back down for the playoffs in Bakersfield. I don't think it's messing up Bakersfield. And I just think the Oilers, you know, they have this slight chance, but I don't see them taking it, Bruce, and with the skill level on the team that they have now.
You mean the skill level of the team that won the last three in a row?
Indeed. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I tend to agree, but I'm not sure they have the solutions within the organization. So I see it as next year country, but they definitely need an infusion of speed, youth, talent, offense, all of those things.
Sure, like that line with Cave and who else is on there right now?
It's tonight.
It was kind of weird. They were moving
Cave,
around.
Cave, Ratty, and Reeder in the third period, and I think they played about three or four shifts, but they spent them all deep in Buffalo territory, winding the clock down. I don't know if they got any shots, but I didn't care. They just.
It's usually Cave and Curry, right?
And it's usually Cave, Curry, and either Lucic or Reeder.
Yeah. Sam Gagner's pulling his weight, so I'd keep him. But I just wouldn't mind seeing that. It's not going to happen, I guess. You know, and maybe there's something to be said for keeping Marody down there. I mean, he is getting a point a game, but it's not.
Well, they've added Curry, they've added Gagner, they've added Cave.
Yes, three useful players, and it's made
it. Those are all guys that are playing, so you can't say they've done nothing. But I'm not sure they're going to do a much more.
Fair enough. Let's leave it there, Bruce.
Sure enough.
Thanks for talking tonight.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Game grades are up, and we'll add the podcast in there right away.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.